This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is continuing coverage of United States versus Sean Diddy Combs. From the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Interesting testimony continues in the trial of Sean Diddy Combs. Capricorn Clark testifying just this week that she worked for Diddy on and off from 04 to about 2018, despite being threatened, physically assaulted, forced to work in a car at gunpoint, traumatized by workplace intimidation. She even reconnected with his legal team in 2024 to ask for a job as chief of staff. Here to discuss her testimony, to break it down, because there's a lot that has come out here. Siobhan Scott, psychotherapist and author. And we're not victim blaming or anything like that here. We're just trying to break down the psychology of what was going on and the control that this man seemed to have over people. I think the big question in this one, you know, people always think of the relationships that are romantic. You know, why didn't she leave? People seem to maybe understand that a little bit better if they've been in a bad relationship and dynamics. We've all had bad jobs, but I don't think quite to this point. What do you think is going on here? Working for him for about 14 years on and off, really horrible abuse, but still keep coming back to Diddy.
Yeah, this could be a book of this woman's life experience. Really, it would be fascinating because I think this is an incredible example of what we call a trauma bond, which is when people, and you mentioned abusive relationships, it's fairly common in a romantic relationship, but people can have that with their parents as well if they're raised in an abusive home. Someone who attaches very deeply and often with affection to someone who is cruel and hurtful to them. And this is hard to understand, but we can all form attachments in this way if we're in the right circumstances and we have the right vulnerabilities. And it's because the perpetrator mixes kindness, rewards, sometimes apologies, sometimes often affection in various ways, mixes it in with the cruelty. And the victim comes to think that when they're being punished in some way or treated badly, that it's their fault. And if they do things different, if they get it right, that it's going to improve. And so in that way, it's almost like an addiction. They keep trying to get it right with the fantasy that someday this is all going to be better. And they get enough out of it as far as money or, you know, self-esteem from the times that the person is kind to them, that it just keeps them coming back. Now, people who have been raised in abusive families are particularly vulnerable to this. And when I look at the length of time that this lady stayed in this situation with him, it makes me think that she must have had a pretty rough childhood.
Yeah. I mean, one would certainly wonder about that. I'm wondering if, like, on a very kind of simplistic level, to help others understand this, is if you've been in, you know, several relationships in your life, wherever that may be, some were good, some were bad, some were just kind of there, but, you know, they were good human beings. What are the ones that, you know, people on average tend to look back on like social media or check up on out of curiosity? It tends to be the bad ones, I would think, in a lot of cases, where one would think if the brain is, you know, working in a more healthy way, you'd be more curious about the folks where it was good and things didn't work out, or even just, you know, it was there, but, you know, how you doing? But to gravitate back towards the trauma out of curiosity, that's interesting. I think it's something all of us do to a certain extent. Now, there's that line of just curiosity, and sometimes it's, I hope they're doing good, or I hope maybe I'm going to see they passed away a few years ago. And there's just, you know, oh, and then you go, oh, maybe nobody noticed and they passed away a few years ago. Or there's, you know, just kind of indifference. Just, that's where they live now. Okay, whatever. Is that a good analogy? Just the curiosity, the way the brain works, where we tend to go back to more negative things out of curiosity than we do things that would be healthier for us?
I think the thing that may be going on there is the tendency to want to connect the dots. Mm-hmm. Why was I with that person? Mm-hmm. What went wrong? What is it about them that hooked me in? And so I think there's this natural curiosity when we're trying to make sense of our own narrative. Certainly, I've done that. I wrote a book on that.
Yes,
trying
you
to
did.
Make sense, trying to make sense of my bad judgment.
Right here.
Yeah.
Nightbird, available wherever you get books.
And a lesson in what really are cluster B disorders and why do people get hooked into these relationships. Mm-hmm. It's almost in a way, I think it is healthy if we're trying to understand ourselves and avoid making those same mistakes in the future.
Very true. Do you think that that could be what was going on here with Capricorn Clark in a way of, I mean, just the idea that, you know, back in, what was it, 2014 or whatever, where when she started working for him, I mean, it was a big deal. People wanted to work. There was a television show called Who Wants to Work for Diddy?
Oh, I did not know that.
It was literally a show.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. So, that's sick.
There was multiple seasons of this thing. And it existed. So it was kind of a thing. It was, people were considering it kind of a big, and at the time, if you didn't know about all this stuff, and most of us didn't, if you got a job with working directly for him as like his like direct head of staff and things of that nature, if you're going into that, you're going to think, oh my gosh, this is going to change my life. This is going to be so good. I'm sure you're excited about it. I'm sure there's just a lot of positivity. And then you get to know Diddy. And then things get really, really dark. But still that hope and that dream of, well, it could be like this. You know, it sure looked like it would be like this, but it's not like this. That makes a lot of sense. If you kind of keep going back on, well, maybe if I handle them differently this way, or I handle them differently that way. This is a professional relationship. It could be true of a personal one too, but that does make sense. Trying to connect those dots. And is it kind of a fixer type thing as well? Where like, if I fix me or fix them, I can get this to go the way it should.
Yeah, it's very seductive. And if a person was raised in a family where that was their role in the family, to try to get it right, to try to keep mom or dad calm. And that's a template that they carry into their adult life. And you can see how Capricorn was probably very vulnerable to this. And the rewards were probably huge. I'm assuming she was well paid financially. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's a hook too. And thinking that if I just win him over, it's going to get better for me.
I think there's a lot of extreme ups and downs with him. It was either hellish and you're working for the devil, or you are living the highest life of some of the very, very few people on this planet. Yeah. And I don't think there was a lot of in between. It was this or it was that. And sometimes that high life ends up being more seductive, where you think, well, I can put up with this enough. I can put, yeah. And it amps and amps and amps. And eventually it's very discombobulated. She described it as total domination of Combs as controlling every aspect of her life. And this is an employee dictating where she lived, forcing drug errands, ordering polygraph tests, even managing her own relationships. What kind of a human being is doing that sort of thing? Or what's more so wrong with a human being who is trying to exert that level of control over anyone, more or less one of your own employees?
It's bizarre. And the thing that's so shocking, as I always say, is that this man has been idolized in our culture. Mm-hmm. And this is one of the most psychopathic people I've heard of. I guess we could say the serial killers, you know, might top it. But this is incredibly psychopathic and bizarre. I don't know how to explain it. What could, other than, as we say, a combination of bad genetics and role modeling and, you know, too much wealth. But there's this sadistic quality with him, and it's beyond belief. This lady would have a heck of a book about psychopathological relationships.
Oh, I can only imagine. Let's talk about another thing that went on. She witnessed there, and it corroborates more stories. I mean, this is why Diddy is going to be going down, at least on the Cassie charges. Clark described watching Combs kick Cassie Ventura repeatedly while she was in a fetal position and said she begged security to step in, but no one helped. How can you explain that? I mean, can you explain moral injury and the trauma that comes from watching violence helplessly, especially when it involves people you care about? Why does someone not step in? Is it fear? Is it it's going to happen to me next? Is it, I don't know, just it happens so regularly, it loses the, you know, the horrid quality of it?
Yeah, the happening regularly, I think, desensitizes people to it. It's sort of like, well, here we go again. But moral injury is a real thing. And you see that often in wartime when people witness atrocities, but feel frozen. And I think that sense of being frozen is part of the trauma response, right? We go fight, flight, freeze, or fawn. And I think she was certainly frozen a good deal of the time, as were probably other people around him. It's sort of like a combination of he was a mafia boss and a cult leader. I mean, it's one of the stranger stories that I've ever heard, not because he was a sadistic and a psychopath, but because he had the power over all these other people and hung out with celebrities, you know, other celebrities. And nobody called this out for decades. It's truly strange.
It is the level that he was able to get away with it on. Another piece that came out in the last week was the firebombing of Kid Cudi's car. This was someone who was dating Cassie Ventura on a little breakup time between the two of them. And, well, Diddy didn't like it. So he threatened that he was going to blow up Kid Cudi's car. And a few weeks later, it was firebombed with a Molotov cocktail. He just testified in court the other day. Clark testified and said Combs forced her into an SUV with a gun in his lap, took her to Kid Cudi's house, and refused to let her go unless Cassie agreed to show up. So this was pressuring her to convince Cassie to come and show up to this meeting that was going to go on. I mean, this is someone who, you know, okay, let's go on this car ride, and he has a gun. I'm guessing he probably had a gun on him a lot. The question I think would be, and I'm sure what the defense is going to try and present, that, well, she was just following directions in a high pressure situation, that they needed to go to this house. And of course he always carries a gun with her, but this is like an actual threat under coercive control, a big difference than just, you know, he's kind of an extreme dude and I'm just following orders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely off the chart and hard to put myself in that kind of situation and imagine what it was like for Capricorn. Mm-hmm. But I think she lived under the terror that she was going to be killed at any given time. And that changes the way a person reacts in situations like that.
There's just so much of where this goes. I'm always just, every day with the Diddy case, I'm like, oh my God, he did that too. I mean, it's so dark. There was another fact that had come out as well. Diddy, and I'm curious to get your thoughts on this. He went as far as convincing Cassie's mom, because she knew that Cassie was in an abusive relationship with Diddy. Basically made Diddy's mom pay him $20,000 or something was going to happen to Cassie.
Wow.
Here's $20,000. Don't tell anybody. It was like, you pay me not to hurt her worse. I mean, this is psychopathic, is it not? I mean,
100% psychopathic and a little bit crazy. I mean, you know, it's hard to understand. Why do you need this kind of power over people? I always use the word sadistic with him too. Yeah. He is above and beyond your average garden variety psychopath who makes up, you know, a lot of the prison system. I mean, he needs a special place in hell, quite frankly. This guy is awful.
I have another question, but I wonder if we're going to start finding bodies soon.
I wonder the same thing. Yeah.
And maybe not even in this conviction, but I do. I mean, because they're still investigating this guy. I'm wondering if we're going to start finding bodies and we're going to start finding people that did die and go. I'm wondering about the Tupac situation, because that whole trial is off the table right now until next year because of new evidence that has come in. We don't know if it's anything to do with Diddy. I don't think it would be far of a stretch, but just, you know, people who aren't even necessarily well known, people, things I wonder about are people like bodyguards, people like security, people who are not like the direct assistants of Diddy, people who are just there to, I guess, you know, kind of keep people in line, be the bouncers and stuff. These people saw a lot of horrible stuff and they didn't report it. They didn't do anything about it. I'm wondering, I mean, it's easy to go, well, why wouldn't they? They could overpower him. They could get out of there. Yeah. But what else is he going to do to them and their family?
Exactly.
Do you think there was a lot of that going on within those ranks? And I'm wondering about the ones who did say, screw you, I'm going to do this anyhow, and got silenced before anything got out or just got laughed out of the room. There actually is, and he was brought up in testimony just recently. I should do a deeper dive on this. This is the man who was the Trump hotel shooter. You remember that guy? A couple years ago, he looked psychopathic, went into the Trump hotel, started shooting things up.
Oh, yeah.
And then he started saying crazy things, at least at the time. It sounded crazy. Started saying crazy things, that he was a sex slave for Diddy. We're like, he just shot up the hotel. Like,
wow.
What? You're a sex slave for Diddy? What?
Yeah.
Well, according to Cassie, he was. He actually was. He was a Chippendales dancer at the time who was recruited and actually was there. And he had sex with Cassie in front of Diddy for money.
Who would have guessed? Those
are the type of folks that I'm wondering about. He was still alive. I mean, he had a mental break and snapped and did that. But, and then he's saying these insanely crazy things. At least we think they're crazy. It's the folks like that that maybe aren't shooting up the hotels, but they're in their own torture chamber of life because they've lost their mind or had some sort of a break from reality, that are out there as well. Because he got out, he got away. But this is where he ended up mentally. That one would have to guess there's a lot more people out there, don't you think?
That's it. And there may be more stories that come out, more people willing to step forward and discuss, you know, the dirty things that have happened after he's convicted and incarcerated permanently.
Yeah.
We may see a lot more. And yeah, it would surprise me if this wasn't just the tip of the iceberg. You know, I think there's a lot more going on with this guy.
I do, too. And I think there's a lot more people who are still not comfortable to talk until they know he cannot get
out. Exactly. Exactly.
Want to stay on top of the latest true crime cases? Press subscribe now and never miss a breaking update from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.